Over the past few years, social media has changed the way that people plan their weddings. The average cost of weddings has gone up consistently over the past 5 years. Now, before social media, planning a wedding was something that was done on weekends or after work. Today, there's Instagram and Pinterest pages all full of wedding ideas to plan the perfect, enviable, Instagrammable wedding. I'm Christy Ein. Today, we're delving into the world of weddings, unpacking the costs, trends, and cultural nuances that make each ceremony unique. Weddings are deeply rooted in cultural traditions, from the colorful celebrations in India to the minimalist elegance of Japanese ceremonies. Each culture brings its unique touch. The differences impact not only the ceremonies, but also the associated costs and planning dynamics. Today, we're seeing a rise in intimate, personalized ceremonies. And there's a shift towards unique venues and experiential elements that reflect the couple's personalities. Planning a wedding involves various expenses, from the venue and catering to attire and decor. Couples need to plan their wedding carefully to avoid unnecessary financial strain. And it is crucial to find a balance between creating a memorable event and managing costs responsibly. Now, the costs of wedding can sometimes skyrocket. High-end venues, elaborate floral arrangements, and custom-designed attire can significantly increase costs. Additionally, couples underestimate hidden expenses such as a prenup, officiant, wedding planners, wedding cakes, and photographers. The biggest and most variable cost is food and drink, which depends on how many guests you plan to have. For a 141-guest wedding, it will be about $10,000. But for weddings with more than 300 people, catering costs can quickly surpass $20,000. But weddings are not just about love. They're also a major economic driver. From venue bookings to floral arrangements, the industry contributes significantly to various sectors, creating jobs and fostering economic growth. Hostels and restaurants are among the most direct beneficiaries of weddings. Out-of-town guests need accommodation, and wedding parties often book blocks of rooms for their guests. And this not only provides revenue for the hotels, but also all of the ancillary services, such as room service, laundry, and dining. Restaurants, too, benefit from rehearsal dinners, wedding reception, and the influx of guests looking for meals before and after wedding events. Local vendors, including caterers, photographers, videographers, and rental companies, also see a surge in business due to weddings. However, today, millennials spend way less on their weddings than older generations. Millennials' views on the cost of engagement rings are also a good example of this. While engagement rings tend to cost an average of around $3,500 to $4,000, millennials prefer that their engagement rings fall in the $1,000 range. One survey found that millennial women agreed with this mentality, and 90% said that an engagement ring should cost no more than $2,500. And now we're joined today by Aisha Haki. So Aisha, how have you observed the overall cost of weddings changing over the past few years? And what factors are contributing to these changes?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, so before the pandemic, around 2018, 2019, I'm based in the US, so I'm gonna give you US prices. But weddings were about, you know, on average across the country, taking in the high parts and the low parts, was about $33,000, you know? But then, you know, obviously when the pandemic hit, it changed, everything changed. And then now we're getting right back into it. And, you know, the average cost has come down now. It's about $30,000 per wedding. But there is definitely, an uptick every single year. So that's sort of what I'm seeing in terms of like the financials of a wedding.
And can you break down the typical expenses associated with weddings and highlight areas where costs tend to escalate?
Yeah, so weddings, you can expect to spend about 30% of your budget, your savings on a wedding. And the biggest two costs are your venue and your catering. Now, the third cost that's actually, you know, it's very flexible, but the decor, because you can do something very simple and elegant, or you could do something very extravagant and over the top. There's, you know, the sky's the limit here. So it really depends on, you know, the couple and their, you know, what their ideas are and thoughts. But usually, like, the catering and the venue are the biggest expenses. Everything after that is, you know, it's nominal, not nominal, but it's a lot more affordable than, you know, the cost of the venue and the catering.
And now, what current trends are you seeing in the wedding industry, particularly in terms of wedding sizes, themes, and venue choices?
You know, before COVID, it was just like, you know, a free-for-all. There was like big weddings, big extravaganzas, everything. And then obviously during COVID, all of a sudden it was just like, well, we'll have 10 people at our wedding. Okay, maybe we'll max out at 50. You know what I'm seeing, though, in terms of like the effects of COVID, is that now I feel like the guest lists are getting just a little bit more selective. And the reason why I say that is I think people want to have a more experiential wedding, and they really want it to be about close family and friends, and they want to bring all of those people together to have, you know, the quote unquote love fest. So I feel like the numbers are a little small right now as opposed to before the pandemic, but, you know, things always change. So it could go bigger, it could go smaller. But right now I feel like people are being very selective on who they're inviting, and then also having it big enough to where it's still a very fun party, but not like, you know, like 1,000 people anymore, so.
And how do societal and cultural shifts influence the preferences of couples when planning their weddings?
Societal shifts, cultural shifts, you know, every time people are always looking at like the new generation. So right now we're at Gen Z. So, you know, it kind of follows what Gen Z is thinking in general. I mean, they're concerned about the planet. So I'm seeing more requests for sustainable weddings, for more sustainable options within the wedding. Obviously, people are, you know, all kinds of dietary restrictions. So they're making sure that they have things for vegans, they have things for, you know, pescatarians, for keto people. You know, they're trying to be a little bit more thoughtful in their approach. And then the last thing that I think, you know, that this new generation wants is they want something experiential, but they also want it to be something that they can share on social media with their networks. So there's, you know, this whole sort of like sort of shift in what the wedding actually looks like now, instead of being, you know, just like this. There's now like more smaller aspects of it that they're focusing on because they want to make sure that it's, you know, the things that I just said, that it's following those thought processes.
Destination weddings have become increasingly popular. How do the costs of destination weddings compare to local celebrations, and what factors should couples consider when planning one?
Yeah, so destination weddings are, they're an interesting concept. I think they're very, very fun. They're probably the best weddings I've ever done. But it depends on where in the world you are, you know. So obviously, if you look at it from a global scale, Paris, you know, the most romantic city in the world, is number one in terms of destinations. A lot of people go to Italy. Again, you know, it speaks for itself. India, the whole idea of it, you know, it's so spiritual and magical. But, you know, again, here in the States, you know, people sort of tend to think of a destination wedding. The number one spot would be the Caribbean or places where I am, in Miami or Puerto Rico, you know, depending on visa requirements of their guests. But the thing about destination weddings, which kind of sort of makes it cost effective, is that especially if you have like a very big guest list, destination weddings are a very natural way to, like, natural selection, bring it down to a smaller amount, because only the people who really care will take on the expense of actually flying down and doing it for you or being a part of your celebration. But the other thing, which a lot of people don't know, and you really, when you're doing a destination wedding, work with a planner, work with somebody who knows what they're talking about, because if you have a certain amount of rooms blocked, you know, so your guests are actually paying for their own rooms in most cases. Sometimes the bride and groom will pay for a few. But like, say you have 50 rooms in your block, the hotel or the resort may offer you enhancements for that, you know, for upsell or upgrades for, you know, the fact that you're bringing them so much in business. So your planner or your travel agent or someone who deals in destination weddings can help you get things like a free welcome reception or, you know, extra desserts or, you know, 10 appetizers, you know, things that you wouldn't really think about if you weren't, you know, if you didn't know. But a lot of times you can really like bring your costs down because the room block, the bigger the room block, the more the hotel is going to give you things. The other thing with destination weddings is they tend to be a little bit smaller because, again, 300 people are not going to fly down for your wedding. I mean, they do, but in most cases, it's usually around 100 or less. And then you can sort of put some of the money that you were planning on spending into, you know, a more luxurious experience because you're not spending it on so many people. So it does cost a little less, but, you know, like with anything, with a wedding or with anything, it really depends on your choices and your venues and where you're going. But an experienced planner or a person who deals in destination weddings will be able to find you the best deals for what you're planning on doing.
Thank you so much, Aisha, but please stick around. We have event planner Aisha Haki who will stay with us right here after the break. And when we come back, we'll discover the latest trends in weddings that offer a more budget-friendly option. Stay tuned for more details.
In North Ossetia, in the Caucasus Mountains, where beautiful people have been coming together to celebrate ancient traditions since the beginning of time itself, where everything has a special symbolic meaning. I'm Sean Thomas, this is Inland Visions, and today we are discovering the world of Ossetian culture.
Surprisingly, the average cost of hosting an Emirati wedding is now over $185,000, making it, on average, the most expensive country for weddings. While many couples do choose to hold a more modest affair, the high cost is driven largely by normative pressure to conform and avoid criticism that may impact family honor. Australia is also expensive, with the average wedding costing just under $70,000. And this is followed by the UK at an average of $35,000 and a US at $33,000. Indian weddings have the largest average guest count of about 524 people per wedding, and these are multi-day events. But even with this huge guest list, the average cost of weddings in India ranges from $15,000 to $22,000. Now, of course, 20% of couples will spend more than $45,000 on their wedding. However, an Indian wedding in North America is a completely different story. Because of the high markup on wedding services in North America, the average Indian wedding costs between $75,000 to $150,000, with many spending a lot more. In major metropolitan cities, the average cost is more like $225,000 to $285,000. Indian parents spend years wishing, hoping, praying for their kids to get married. So these celebrations represent love and commitment and also epitomize the endurance of traditional family values. And although the pandemic lockdowns are a thing of the past, the U.S. is still struggling with rising inflation. This has now ushered in the era of micro weddings and Zoom ceremonies. In American culture, usually the bride's family covers the majority of the expenses. However, in Chinese culture, the groom's family is expected to pay for most of the expenses, including the wedding rings, ceremony, and the wedding banquet. On top of that, the groom's family is also responsible for sending betrothal gifts, which may include golden jewelry, wine, and traditional Chinese wedding cakes. But couples today are gravitating away from this tradition and increasingly choosing to split wedding expenses. And not only are these smaller, cheaper weddings less stressful, but a study showed that a higher expenditure on your wedding could lead to an increased likelihood of divorce. This is due to the financial burden and stress caused by weddings that have ramifications later on down the road when it comes down to saving money for a house or for a child. So for this and more, let's bring in again event planner Aisha Haki. Now, Aisha, how do cultural traditions impact the cost and scale of weddings in different countries or communities?
Ultimately, you know, the wedding, the most important parts of the wedding is the ceremony, and then people like to have a reception or some sort of a feast afterwards. However, in countries like India, in China, some parts of traditional Africa, there's a lot of like smaller ceremonies that kind of lead up to the big day. So it really depends on, you know, what are your family traditions, what are things that you believe in, and which one of those ceremonies that, you know, you want to have as part of your wedding. So like in India, I mean, I've seen weddings where people have been celebrating like 3 months out. You know, there's this event, now this event, now this event, now this event, and then the wedding will happen, and then they'll have something on the fourth day, and then the 10th day, and then the 15th day. So they really stretch out the wedding because they, you know, they can and they want to. So it really, really depends on, you know, where you're from, what's your community expecting, what's your family traditions. Sometimes in the States, you know, we're, you know, all of us here are a little bit more, you know, we're a hyphen. We're like, I'm from Pakistan and I'm American, so I'm a Pakistani American. So that hyphen culture, we sort of like maybe tone down a little bit of like the cultural stuff, only in terms of, you know, people work 9 to 5. You can't have them coming out every single night, you know. So we'll do a few and then end up with the ceremony and the reception. But it really just depends.
And with the influence of social media, do you see couples being more influenced by trends and the desire to create Instagram-worthy weddings?
I hate the word trends because I feel like in this day and age with social media, the minute you say something is a trend, people have moved on to something else. You know, there's all these challenges that are always showing up and, you know, yada, yada, yada. I think, though, that a lot of my clients do show me pictures that they see on Instagram, on TikTok, on Pinterest, and say, I like this, I like this, I like this. And, you know, because, you know, I'm a planner, I'm seeing this all the time. So what I try to do is say, okay, somebody has done that. Now let's try to take that and personalize it and let's make it yours, you know? So that's a really nice way to sort of take what something that people consider a trend and sort of make it into something new. I think that's very important because you don't want your wedding to look dated. So like a couple of years ago, everybody was doing champagne walls, you know, the green wall and blah, blah, blah. And today everybody's doing neon signs. So I always try to push my clients to go just a little bit further than what they're seeing currently because you don't want your wedding to look like it was a trend. But yes, social media does influence because it's the information we're seeing on a daily basis and it's beautiful. I mean, these, you know, these videos and these photos are gorgeous. So it's like, yes, I want to do something like that. But again, the key to it is like take it and personalize it, you know. And then on the flip side of that equation is that when they do have the wedding, you know, they want to see moments or vignettes that they can photograph or where people can stand in front of and take a photograph or here's a place I can do a video. So we're looking at, you know, when we're putting an event together, we're also looking at the lighting of the space. You know, you want to make sure that the food looks pretty, even though you're using up lights or whatever. You want to make sure that that visual is looks good on somebody's cell phone because ultimately that's how it's going to end up. In the long run, it's going to be shared, it's going to be, you know, broadcast. So you want to make sure that the whole event, you know, your little like areas and the overall experience, sadly, or maybe not so sadly, is phone ready. So yeah.
The COVID-19 pandemic has undoubtedly affected the wedding industry. How have couples adjusted their plans, and have you observed any lasting changes in the wedding trends or spending habits?
Yeah, so COVID was a beast. I mean, it was the amount of, you know, pivotal changes we had to make at the last minute due to, you know, now we have a rise, now it's falling, now it's ebbing, now it's, you know, flowing, whatever. But I think one of the things that has sort of lasted after COVID is that people really do want to celebrate with their loved ones. They want to be close to them. They want to, you know, mark their union with them. They're including, you know, my mom's favorite flavor for cake is, you know, butter pecan, so can I include that in? Or, you know, my uncle, who I'm really close to, he really likes the color blue. How can I bring that in? So people are sort of, you know, beyond the couple, they're really looking at like their closest loved ones and saying, okay, how can I bring them in? I'm going to have so-and-so give a speech. I'm going to have, you know, so-and-so make the first toast. I'm going to bring my niece into the first dance because she's so close to me. So people are really finding ways to celebrate their loved ones, because I think, you know, during COVID, we were so far apart. And now people are really realizing is that, you know, these unions mean something, these relationships matter, and I want them to be a part of my most special day.
And are there emerging trends in the virtual or hybrid weddings, and how do these impact overall costs?
That's a great question, because, you know, during COVID, all of a sudden everybody was like, I need to have it, like, you know, live streamed, I need to have it, you know, posted to Facebook, and we actually started making plans for that. So it wasn't just, you know, somebody standing in the corner with their phone. We actually had teams come in and film it. In fact, I did one where the wedding was in the US and their family was in India, and they were a big Bollywood family. So we had multiple cameras, you know, switching back and forth for the live stream. So it felt like they were watching a movie rather than just like one static camera. I mean, it's pretty expansive setup that we had. What I'm noticing afterwards is that people are still seeing that, you know what, so-and-so can't make it from China. You know, my great-grandmother is too old to travel, so I'm going to live stream this, and my cousin over there is going to, like, you know, put it up for her to watch. So I am noticing that, especially, like, you know, since we are like more of a global world and everybody is from everywhere, that people are streaming parts of their ceremony, maybe not the whole thing, parts of the ceremony, parts of the reception, and having it available for people around the world to tune in, so that they can share in these festivities. And before COVID, it was a thought, it wasn't really there, but then, you know, now with Zoom being so ubiquitous, it's just become so much easier to do so. And I think more and more couples are finding parts of their celebration that they want to live stream for their loved ones.
Now, planning a wedding involves significant financial decisions. What advice do you have for couples navigating the balance between creating their dream wedding and also managing costs responsibly?
They say that a wedding is going to cost somebody about 30% of their savings, you know, and that's, you know, sometimes that can be a significant amount. So my, you know, I try to be very practical about this. I get, you know, having a wedding is a very emotional decision. And people are like, oh my God, I've been thinking about this my whole life, you know, fairy tale, yada, yada, yada. I always tell them, think of your dream wedding, you know, no holds barred. Put down every idea you want on paper. Now, on a separate piece of paper, let's put down realistically what your cost is. You know, how much do you have to spend without going into debt? That is the worst possible thing. You know, parents usually contribute. These days, the couple is also picking up a large part of that responsibility. Then, you know, take your two lists and find a happy medium, because that's where you're going to find something magical. And a lot of times it's, again, it's a very emotional decision versus a very analytical, logical decision. So there is a little bit of like tension finding that space. But again, working with a good planner, somebody who can sort of walk you through that and say, okay, if you only want to spend X amount, you know, let's focus in on this part, which is on your dream list. And then we don't have to focus so much on this because this is something that you don't even have listed on your dream thing. So the biggest advice I can say is be realistic about your expectations, be flexible, be creative in your approach, because in creativity you find magic. And then most importantly, your wedding, although it's, again, a very emotional decision, is not worth going in debt for, because it's for one day. But your union, it's going to last a lifetime. And so think about, you know, I need to save some money for that down payment for a house, or I need to, you know that, you know, I have this life journey ahead of me, and I'm going to have money for that. So don't go into debt. Be realistic and, you know, be creative in how you go about doing this.
Thank you so much, Aisha, for all your time today. So it seems like once the ring goes on, the pressure to find the perfect cake, book the perfect venue for the reception, and coordinate the biggest blowout is on. Couples even struggle to find the perfect wedding hashtag as a way to brand their own nuptials. Thanks to Instagram, Pinterest, and Snapchat, the wedding industry is booming from couples trying to outdo each other for their special day. Because of social media, couples are able to easily connect with vendors, read reviews, and view portfolios, allowing the wedding business to flourish. But the constant exposure and pressure and stress can have real and negative impacts on couples. And ultimately, social media has also created unrealistic expectations as couples are exposed to these extravagant weddings, but that might not align with their budget or personal preferences, which then leads to disappointment. I'm Christy Yai. Thanks for watching, and we'll see you right back here next time on The Cost of Everything.